Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com podcast. This is Richie Hampton, and tonight I have a very special guest, one of America's great golf writers and writers, the one and only Mr. Pete McDaniel. And Pete, man, it is an honor and pleasure to have you on. And brother, we got a lot to talk about because last Sunday's 83rd playing of the Masters will go down as, you know, one of the most memorable ever. It may be the best for a lot of people. Pete, what were your thoughts on Tiger Woods' fifth green jacket and the journey it took for him to get there?
Well, I tell you, Rick, it was the most amazing thing that I've ever been. Well, I won't say I was involved in it, but I guess I was emotionally. But I've seen a lot of comebacks. I've seen a lot of glorified moments in golf, in sport in general. And I don't think anything compares to it for the way Tiger comported himself, the journey that he was on trying to get back. And nobody knows the depths of the hell that he was in. Except him, and then to win the Masters in the way that he did, coming back for the first time in a major championship and winning, it was just like icing on the cake. I had a house full of people. We were all pulling for him, of course, and there were tears from corner to corner, grown men crying. I might have even had a tear or two in my eye, having known just what a battle it was for him to make it back. So it was quite emotional, and as a matter of fact, I'm still kind of lost for words. It was just amazing.
Yeah, you know, Pete, I cried tears of joy myself, man. It was just wonderful to see. My wife was jumping up and down. I mean, it was something, and one thing that just stood out to me, here in Detroit, my friend, Coach Ray Scott, former coach of the Pistons, first black man to win the NBA Coach of the Year, he calls me after Tiger birdie 16th. He says, "Rick, are you watching this? Are you watching this?" I'm like, "Of course I am, Coach." I said, "Coach, I didn't know you watch golf." He said, "I don't, but I watch Tiger."
Well,
and I just thought that,
you know. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a sentiment that has been somewhat of a, I guess you'd call it, I don't know exactly what to call it, but I can tell you this. There are grandmothers who feel the same way that Coach felt. You know, they didn't watch any golf, and then Tiger played, and they were glued to the TV. So, I mean, it was just, you know, that's the impact that he's had on a lot of people. And Sunday was one for the books. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is really extraordinary. And here's a guy. He has to be the most scrutinized athlete ever. I mean, even in his heyday when he was playing well. If he hit one bad shot in the fairway, his swing is analyzed, overanalyzed, and, you know, slow-mos. If he doesn't sign an autograph, he's criticized for that.
Well, that's that double standard that you and I know is prevalent in golf, especially in tennis as well, but especially in golf. Tiger's had a really – I know it's been, people see it as a glamorous life. You know, you are able to travel the world. You make millions and millions of dollars. But you're always in the public eye. So you're always subject to scrutiny. And he hasn't made all the perfect steps. We acknowledge that. But he is human. And we all make mistakes. And he made his share. But he also had to walk a very thin line between his privacy in his public life, and sometimes they it just didn't match up. I've had people, I've been in walking inside the ropes when You know, he's been received. He's received some really harsh comments from the gallery, and that's from up north all the way to the deep south. It really didn't matter. So, you know, no athlete has ever had to endure all of the slings and arrows that he has. And to come back, some of it was self-inflicted, as I said last time. But to come back and win the Masters at age 43, break an 11-year major winless streak, and win for the first time at Augusta National in 14 years, and achieve his first comeback victory in a major championship, just absolutely astonishing.
You're absolutely right, man. It is, you know, we're 3 days out now, and well, 2 days out, and whatever it is, I can't even keep count of the days. I mean, he is still listening to the radio today. Tiger is the story. Everywhere mm-hmm. you go, Tiger is the story. But Pete, for him to, you know, what I respect for him from him is the fact he did not have to do this. He could have gone home with his 14 majors and said, hey, the worst you can ever say, I'm the second best golfer in the world. But he chose to step back out in the arena and take on all the criticism that was going to come from the likes of Chambly and so many other haters. He stepped back out there and proved again his greatness.
Well, he had to. He did have to. I kind of differ with you there. He couldn't go out like that. If there was any chance at all that he could find a remedy for his back issues, he had to come back if that was going to be the case, and that's exactly what happened to him. I mean, he found in that fusion, he found a way that he could play again, and it was just incumbent upon him to prove everybody wrong. The one thing that people underestimate about Tiger is his competitive will. He wants to win. He's a showman. So stack the odds against him and then see what he does. It's been that way all the time.
Wow. You're listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio podcast with Ricky Hampton. My guest is Pete McDaniel, author of Uneven Lives, The Heroic Story of African Americans in Golf. And Pete, you know, it's so many guys. My golf league here in Detroit, we had the text line burning up, about 15 of us, and everybody was cheering this guy on, and like me, in tears after his victory. And I know for me, what Tiger represents is what may have been years ago with the likes of Teddy Rhodes and so many of the guys you chronicled in your book. Do you think that's why so many from the black golf community stand behind him?
I think so. I mean, if you go back to 1997 when he won his first Masters, and that was his first major championship, and I contend then that Tiger had a mission, and the mission was to prove once and for all that a person of color could win at the highest level. And so I think that the victory in 1997 was for us, for all of the mm-hmm. downtrodden, all of us who have been persecuted, all of us who have been told we can't do something, all of us who had to fight the exclusivity of, you know, country clubs and playgrounds and swimming pools and, you know, what Jim Crow didn't do to us, the man did. So that victory was confirmation that we could do it. This victory,
right,
however, was redemption for Tiger. This one was personal. This one was for him. So, you know, he had to prove to the world that he could come back better than ever. And he did it in dramatic style.
Yeah. His knowledge and experience really showed at Augusta on Sunday. After, you know what, I did not know. He said after the round that he knew Koepka and Poulter had hit the ball in the water on 12. Because I was hoping he had a little birdie putt on 11, and I'm texting with the guys. Believe it or not, I don't want him to make this putt because I don't want him hitting first with that wind swirling around. But it just so happened he didn't make it. But it turned out, Pete, I didn't want to step up there like that, man. I wanted somebody to go before. And it turned out
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm laughing because that's exactly what we were seeing in my living room watching it on TV. We were so grateful that he had the guinea pigs go before him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you remember, Tiger at the Players Championship on number 17, he went first. He was still in it, you know. Mm-hmm. He was in good position to make a charge, and he stood up there first, coming off a birdie on 16, and we're saying, I was with some of my friends, and we're saying, oh, my gosh, why is he hitting first? Why does he have to hit first? And sure enough, he hits it in the water and actually hit it in the water twice and made triple bogey, and that was the end of the tournament for him.
That was it.
Made a quad. Yeah. I'm sorry, made a quad. I said triple bogey, but he made a quad. So when Molinari stepped on that tee, I kind of breathed a sigh of relief. Okay, a relief. Let's see what he's going to do. And I believe that was pivotal for Tiger. I mean, he was going to hit the shot the way he was going to hit it anyway. That was his experience. He was not going to go for that sucker pin. And that was the difference down the stretch, Tiger's experience and the other guy's inexperience. And so that's how he pulled it out.
Hey, Pete, how do you think his when I watch him now, he seems to really embrace all that. It's like he's glad he's getting a second chance to play. But over the years, how has he been perceived by his peers on the PGA Tour? Has there been a lot of jealousy and, I guess, probably the whole gamut? But could you help us understand some of that?
I think maybe at first he was, when he first came out, I mean, there were guys like Phil Mickelson and some of the veterans who felt that he hadn't earned the right to be, the much ballyhooed player that he came in as. And so I'm sure there was some jealousy. But he proved very early that he was the player that everybody thought he was. So they had to give it to him. You know, but over the years, they had to admit, too, that he brought so much money into the game that he turned a lot of them into instant millionaires, and they'd never won a doggone tournament. Money just flowed for about 15 years, and I mean flowed from players, agents, the PGA of America, the PGA Tour, the USGA. I mean, our salaries, increased. He meant he brought so much more cash into the game that it was impossible for them to deny him. And, you know, they may have not cared that much for him as a competitor because he beat their brains out, but they had to admit, their bank accounts were swelling, and that, after all, is what it's all about.
Absolutely. That cat has made a lot of people a lot of money. We look forward. He goes to the Best Paid Black next month, and then he goes to the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. I actually covered that one in 2000. Pete, that was the best golf I've ever seen anybody play, ever.
He was spectacular. He was absolutely spectacular. You're right.
Can he get another major this year?
I think he can. I don't see why he can't. I mean, the golf courses that are coming up, he's already won a major on them. So, I think he has complete control of his game now. He's healthy. He needs to work on his putting just a little bit. And if I get to talk to him, I'll tell him exactly what he's doing. If I ever get another chance to talk to him, and because I see exactly, at least what I think he's doing on those short putts, he's kind of moving his head slightly. And I don't know if anybody's told him that, but that's what's going on with him. But yeah, he can win one or two, at least two, I think.
Pete, about the is there, because you are as close to Tiger out there as anybody has ever been in terms of covering him. What happened with some of his relationships with like Butch Harmon and then Hank Haney and his caddy? Was that jealousy on their part, or because all those guys have been critical of Tiger, and Tiger's never really said anything negative about those guys.
Tiger's big on loyalty. You know, I know the backstory about each one of those individuals that you mentioned. I can't share it with you, but let me just say that Tiger's big on loyalty. If you are loyal to him, he'll be loyal to you. He's very demanding too. He requires the person to give 110%. Just like he gives it on the golf course. And if he catches you slacking, not saying that any of them was, but that relationship's not going to last too long. It's complicated. It is complicated, but suffice it to say that it was best that they parted ways when they did. And not a one of them parted ways with Tiger on good terms. That tells you that there was some friction between them. My biggest disappointment was probably Steve Williams, because he had pledged that Tiger was going to be the last bag that he had. And I think that was more of a personal thing. I think he might have gotten caught up. That was during the scandal. And, perhaps Steve's somewhat of a straight shooter. He might be a bit self-righteous, as a matter of fact. And maybe he couldn't handle the heat that was coming Tiger's way, and maybe some people might have thought that he was involved in it. So I don't know, but he distanced himself from it. And I'm not so sure I blame him, but then to write a book about it and to be highly critical of Tiger, the man who made him a multimillionaire, I never could see that. So that was quite disappointing, you know.
That's my thing. I mean, you know, Butch Harmon had a reputation, but not like he does now. Tiger made him. Hank Haney,
right.
He's on the radio now. Tiger made him. All these
guys
rolled Tiger's tail. And then, I mean, you should at least, okay, this guy made me a lot of money. I'm not going to go back and cut it. But I guess that's neither here nor there, though, because this man has come back, redeemed himself, showed that he is still, in my mind, Pete, the greatest golfer ever. Hey, I got much respect for Jack Nicklaus, brilliant golfer. He's the greatest champion of this game because he's got 18 majors. But in my mind, Pete, Tiger's the greatest golfer that ever lived.
The greatest player, no doubt about it, because he could do things that Jack couldn't do. Jack was just as dominating in his era as Tiger has been in his, but different kind of player. You know, Tiger has all the creativity. He has all of the wedge play. The determination is the same, I believe, between the two of them.
Yeah.
Both of them were longer than everybody else that they were playing against, and both of them were outstanding, amazing winners. I mean, so you can compare and contrast. If there's a difference, I think it's the creativity and the sheer flair that Tiger has had. Jack was just beat you to death, bludgeon you to doggone death. Tiger would, he was more Muhammad Ali. He'd dance around you, you know, and throw a few punches, and then, you know, he'd go into his Ali shuffle and that kind of stuff on you. And it was the creativity. That's what the world fell in love with. That's why little old ladies, like I said, when he won his first masters. From that point on, little old ladies on Sundays would be, they might even skip church to watch Tiger Woods play. I know that for a fact because I know some of my family members were the ones that I'm talking about. So, little kids wanted to be Tiger. My son, who has played the game now for about 10, 11 years, had a man crush on Tiger. I mean, this is the impact he's had on the game. There's never been it. Arnie was tremendous during his era.
Yep.
Arnold Palmer. I mean, he popularized the game like no one had before. Tiger comes along and takes it up a notch. And no one else, I don't think, will ever have that kind of impact again. And he's not done. He's not done. You know, can he win enough majors to break Jack's record of 18 majors? He's 3 shy right now. I wouldn't put it past him.
And Pete, you were a guest on our show the other night on the African American Athlete.com radio show. And we talked about he's going to always be able to play Augusta. Always ready to play at the Open Championship because of his creativity and the way he could keep the ball low in the wind and all that. So, I mean, it's wide open for him going forward.
As long as he stays healthy, that's the thing.
Yeah.
We don't know if the back is a permanent fix or if it's, you know, if he's got three, if he has 3 or 4, maybe 5 more years left in him, he'll get it done. I have no doubt. You know, the main thing that – another thing that I got from Sunday was the fact that, you know, people have been talking about how's he gonna be able to stack up against all these young guns. Well, I think he answered that at the Tour Championship, but, of course, they figured that that was a limited field. So, okay, all right. Well, let's see what he does when – and some are even saying – that this was a limited field because there were only like 87 players in it. Well, there are 87 of the top players in the world.
Right.
You know, so they neglect to say that. But the way he dominated with his mind, with his experience, the way he carved out that 200 par on the back nine was just sheer just brilliance. And the young guns, there were about 5 or 6 of them, maybe even 8 of them, who were in contention then, you know. And he beat them.
You know, we were laughing when Cantley, I think he got tied for the league or whatever. And I'm like, oh, that dude looked at the leaderboard and said, man, I'm tied for the Masters. And I think he might have bogeyed the 2 of the next 3 holes. It's like, what the hell? I'm doing here, man. You know, everybody just can't handle that heat up there, Pete. They just can't. Pete.
Yeah, well, you know what they say about the heat in the kitchen, you know. Go ahead.
That's right. Hey, man, uneven lies. What prompted you to write this book? And was certainly a book we needed. The entire golf world needed to hear. Because so many people think golf started when Tiger came out. And your book corrects that myth
exactly.
Unbelievably well.
Well, I have a friend, Craig Bowen. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he was a tight list rep. And he kind of came to me one day and called me up and said, Pete, you know, I think I can talk the folks at Tight List into sponsoring a video. If we did somewhat of a video of some of the Chitlin Circuit players, and he knew that I was from Asheville, and he knew that there was still a Chitlin Circuit event going on in Asheville called the Skyview Open. I said, yeah, that might be kind of cool. I'll help you with that. So we hire a film crew out of Detroit, by the way, and go to Asheville doing the Skyview, and they take all of these shots and interview all of these players like Bobby Strobel and James Black and guys like that.
Yeah.
Chuck Thorpe. And they take the film back to Wally Uline, who was the CEO of Titleist Footjoy Worldwide. And Wally gives me a call and says, "Pete, I want you to come up and talk about this project that I want you to that we're thinking about undertaking." And so I'm in Wally's office, and he says, "Pete, I think maybe we're getting the cart before the horse with this film that we're talking about doing. I think we need a book first." And I said, "Wally, okay, sounds good." And he says, "You're the man to write it." I said, "That sounds even better." So that's how the book came about. Titleist put a lot of money into it. Craig Bourne did a lot of the research. And I was fortunate enough. See, I was very interested in it anyway because I come from a place, you know, where I had seen all of these players and I didn't know anything about the Black Golf Tour. So it kind of fascinated me. And then the research part really intrigued me. And the more I learned, the more I wanted to learn. And that's how the book came about. You know, it was Dr. Calvin Sinnett had already written Forbidden Fairways.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I wanted mine to be different from his in that, you know, his was more of a clinical approach to it, a very well written, you know, the research was impeccable.
Right.
But it was from an academic kind of stand.
Right.
And being a writer, that is my profession, I wanted to write a story. So I told it in more of a story manner. And I think that's why people enjoyed it so much because I, you know, that's what I do, you know.
Right.
And so it was highly acclaimed, well-received, and of all the things that I've done in the game, that's my kind of crowning glory to this point. I think I have some more stuff to contribute, but up to this point, I think that's been my baby.
Wonderful baby, man, I tell you. And you know, growing up in Nashville, when my dad was the pro at Ted Rose Golf Course, I saw those guys come into town for the Ted Rose Golf Tournament and some pretty interesting money matches before the tournament. Hey, I don't know if you – did you know Robert Lee Walker?
Oh, absolutely.
Had you heard,
Robert Lee.
You know,
Robert Lee.
He just passed
Go
away.
Ahead. I didn't know
he just passed
That's
away
after
that.
Wow. Robert
yes.
Lee used to come to Asheville and play in the Sky View. He won it maybe three or four times, and he would shoot absolutely nothing. You hear me?
Yeah.
62s and threes and stuff like that. Cool as he wanted to be, just as nonchalant.
Yeah.
Didn't even look like a golfer, but he played some magnificent golf. Wonderful player.
Yeah. I tell you, man, so many wonderful memories as a kid being around when those guys would come to town, George Wallace, Tater Pie.
Absolutely.
And Robin Lee and Bobby Strobel, Nate Stark.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Nate
so
Stark.
Many. George Johnson, GG.
GG,
I mean,
absolutely.
Guys, I think you wrote about Cliff in the book. I believe Cliff is in your book. Cliff Brown.
He is. Absolutely. Cliff Brown's in the book. Mm-hmm. And
I mean,
all of these players, they played on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
They made it to the big time. They didn't stay long, but they had the guts, courage, and they had the games to make it to the big dance.